It's not that I'm over sunsets and storms, but my most recent gasp-inspiring nature experience was caused by something smaller than a can of Coke. At first I saw it only peripherally, a stone-still shape on a canal-crossing power line. Double arrowhead crest, dense chest, big head, short legs, a kingfisher. With a quick hop, the bird leapt off the wire, but it didn't go anywhere. It hovered, wings flickering, tail twitching, as it hung in place over the canal, an airborne swimmer paddling frantically with its wings, its shadow on the water a speed-blurred dot. Then, like a tiny anvil, it plummeted straight into the canal, disappearing underwater before helicoptering back up, a silver squirm of protein caught in the hinge of its scissored-open bill that vanished as the bird reperched, gulped once, gave itself a smart shake, then let loose a call that sounded like a chorus of sped-up crickets. I'd never given kingfishers much thought, presuming that only hummingbirds, jeweled fairy creatures commonly accepted as miraculous, were the only ones that can do the hang-in-the-air trick. But here was this ungainly little guy, spike-crested head almost as big as the rest of his body, performing the same feat. I did some reading and learned the kingfisher's hover plunge isn't the half of it. Kingfishers don't build tree nests woven of sticks and candy wrappers. When it's time to breed, they choose a bit of fresh waterfront property and start excavating, tunneling deep into the bank. Think of it, a bird no bigger than a lemon digging a 15-foot hole with its strange little fused toes and a beak the size of a Toyota key. Early naturalist John James Audubon described the process. The male and female, after having fixed upon a proper spot, are seen clinging to the bank of the stream in the manner of woodpeckers. Their long and stout bills are set to work, and as soon as the hole has acquired a certain depth, one of the bird enters it and scratches out the sand, earth, or clay with its feet, striking meanwhile with its bill to extend the depth. The other bird, all the while, appears to cheer the laborer and urge it to continue its exertions, and, when the latter is fatigued, takes its place. Incubation is performed by both parents, which evince great solicitude for the safety of their young. Then, in typical Audubon fashion, he describes his attempts to collect one. Audubon had no qualms about loss of avian life. Research was paramount, a fact that doesn't sit quite right with my latter-day sensibilities. But never mind, I told myself, that was then. I read on. When I attempted to secure one of these birds, long after night had closed, I tried in vain. The first time, I fitted a small net bag to the entrance and returned home. Next morning, the bird had scratched a passage under the net and thus escaped. The following evening, I saw it enter the hole, and having procured a stick that filled the entrance for upwards of a foot, I felt certain of obtaining it. But before I reached the place next day, it had worked its way out. After this, I abandoned my attempt. Audubon must have gotten another bird eventually. His kingfishers in Birds of America are precisely detailed and still as death. But somewhere, one superb little hunter survived a campaign by one very determined collector. I'd like to think that plucky bird cheered and chuckled at Audubon's departing back like a cartoon hero, passing its joie de vivre to future generations of kingfishers, even the little bird I saw snatching breakfast from a suburban canal.